Namaste and welcome. It's nice to see new people here today and all the other faces that we already know and love. We may have stragglers coming in an hour because of the time change. Can you talk about transcendental meditation in relation to a spiritual practice? Whose is this? Okay. Would you like to clarify a little bit more? Would you grab a microphone, please? No, push the button up. There we go.
I practice transcendental meditation, so it's just in relation to this process, what you're talking about in terms of, and wanting to incorporate that into a daily spiritual practice, which I don't know what that looks like. And that was one of my other questions I put in your basket, was more about a daily practice and then the TM. And maybe just Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, who he is in terms of all of this, I don't
know. Okay. Usually what happens is you take diksha under a guru and then you follow their guidance. When you take diksha here, I give you specific mantras to do, and they are not based on the transcendental meditation mantras. Okay, what they're giving out with transcendental meditation is they go and give you a mantra based upon your age at the time when you take it. Okay, so basically what they've done is divided up Bij mantras and given them out. So it's not picked for you specifically because of your type of vibration or anything like that. It's just given out based upon your age. Yeah, that's what they do. And it's, like I said, it's Bij mantras. And Bij mantras, they can work to activate certain chakra areas, but they only work in one specific area. So it's best to take diksha with one guru and then stay with that practice and that modality, rather than trying to incorporate things from different teachers. Because then all you do is wind up getting confused. Okay, we don't want more confusion. We want to try to get you out of confusion. So find a guru that you resonate with, a path that you resonate with, and then take instruction there and continue forward. Okay. What does a daily spiritual practice look like? It must be your other one. Okay, so moving right along. Here, what a daily spiritual practice is every moment of your life is part of a spiritual practice. Okay, it's not something that's relegated to a certain time of the day that you sit for an hour and do a puja and wave the incense and do that, and that's not what it's about here. Yes, I give mantras out, and so usually in the morning you get up and you do the mantras, and that prepares your mind and helps to get you into a sense of stillness, and from there you go into meditation, and then you begin your day. Okay. Then every aspect of your day can be part of also spiritual practice. Here also you get a balanced breath. You have to breathe, okay, all day. So you can put this into practice throughout the day. When you find yourself getting tense again, you go back into this relaxed breathing, this balanced breathing, and help to center yourself. Then also the mindset throughout the day. You enter, whatever you're doing can be part of one of the yogas. Yoga means union. Okay, so what you're doing when you're entering into a mindset of doing a yoga practice, it's with the eventuality that you'll enter into union eventually with this divine essence, become more aware of it. Because it's the essence of your being. Now it's just covered over with all of this other nonsense that we've collected, which makes us feel separate or inferior or whatever it is we're going through. Okay. So one of the yogas is karma yoga. And in karma yoga, it's when you do what you need to do, what is your, like, if you're a nurse, you give the best care that you can. Okay? And you let go of what comes out of it. Okay? So you enter the best that you can for society, for guru, for God, whatever your focus is. And then let go if you get rewards or whatever. Or if rewards aren't coming, it doesn't matter. Okay? Because you give your best. Give back to society. Give back to God. Also with this, then you work on bhakti, which is love and devotion. So when you're doing karma yoga, you should also do it with bhakti, with love. Okay? Work on opening the heart. No matter what you do, do it as if you are... It's like in Indian households, when a guest comes, they want to serve them food, because they say you don't know when God's entering your house unawares. Also, the Bible translates something like that. You never know when the angels are coming unawares. Okay. So it's just using bhakti to open the heart and to go through your life with an attitude of love and service and gratitude for what you have. And giving back. Okay. So every part of your life can be part of your spiritual sadhana or spiritual practice. Okay. Doing one thing at a time rather than having the mind run wild. If you do one thing at a time, whatever practice you're doing, whatever you're doing, can become a moving meditation. It can help to take you to stillness. One thing at a time, with attention. The way to remember this is remember what it's like when they're doing a Japanese tea ceremony. A simple act of making tea becomes a meditational practice, okay? Zen, simplify, simplify, simplify. Come to more simplicity in your life. Quit chasing the complexities. Okay, so every breath, every moment is a chance for spiritual practice. Okay, when people come here, I'm very hard on them. I say, there's no doing an hour a day, it's the whole day. It's every moment of your life is geared towards seeking that divine, to find that. Okay. So I hope that helps to answer your question on what is the spiritual practice. It's living. Okay. Thank you for feeding the satsang bowl. It's hungry this morning. What is required for enlightenment? Is a sincere desire to know the truth adequate? It's a good starting point. Okay. What's required for enlightenment is to be willing to let go and surrender. To let go of all the things that are covering it over. Enlightenment is what they say is your basic nature. everyone has the same supreme divine essence within them. Without that, they would have no life. Okay. I hate to hear this thing that they go out and they say that, well, everyone's enlightened, so I don't need to do anything. I prefer to say everyone has the potentiality for enlightenment, because the divine essence is the seed of all being. But yet you're not enlightened if you're suffering. If you're suffering, then you're still in duality, you're still in divided mind, you're still caught up in this worldly stuff, still caught up in the anger, still caught up in all of these things. Okay, so that's not being enlightened. They say, well, there's nothing to do. Yeah, when you get to enlightenment, there's nothing left to do. But before that, yes, there's lots to do. Okay. But the doing is not in doership, that I'm going to get there, because there's no I that remains when you get to enlightenment. There's simply that divine essence, which is present and fully is within all life, all times. Okay. So this has been a little bit skewed. The understanding of it is a little skewed. The way to get to enlightenment is, once again, through bhakti, opening the heart, and surrender, letting go of doership. Okay. When you can start to let go and surrender, then guess what? Grace appears. Okay. Get yourself out of the way, and grace begins to appear. When you stop pushing it away, it's right there. Simply. Very simple. Very simplistic. The more complex it is, the more the mental stuff is going around and around. The more dogma, the more coverings are in place. The reality is very simple. It's absolutely pure, unchanging, potential, which is always in place. So the way to enlightenment is through letting go. Opening the heart, allowing that to expand, or going in a contraction and really questioning what is holding all of this drama in place. It's the me. Well, what is this me? Okay. Is it the mind? Is it the body? The body's a vehicle. If you cut off a finger, it's still me, okay? Let go. That's not it. It's not the body. Mind is created of what? Thoughts. Thoughts come and go. Okay? When the mind finally stills, it's no longer creating a me. A me story, a me drama. There simply is this divine bliss which starts to arise, because there's no longer any separation between you and anything else. It's just simply one. Okay. And these waves will wash through. And if at that point you look at the fire and you're not any longer feeling separate or trying to analyze it or judge it, there'll just be this feeling of it. And it resonates in yourself as bliss, not separate. Total oneness. Okay. So enlightenment winds up being the path of total simplicity. Okay. Letting go, opening the heart, no longer having these desires that are running you, or aversions where you're pushing everything away. It's coming into a centered stillness within yourself. And that's all. Sure, easy for you to say, huh? This is why we have the practices to help to allow you to come to a sense of stillness where you can let go of these things. Forgiveness for others and changes from bad habits. Okay. The further you go on this path, the more you see that people are in ignorance. Okay. And they're driven. By desires. And these desires bring a lot of pain for themselves and for others. Okay. Eventually you come to a point of seeing this and you start to have forgiveness. Okay. I can only speak on this from my own life, where I went through a situation of being raped. It was very violent, horrible thing. I had a lot of anger, a lot of hatred. Okay, but then finally I stepped back and saw who continues to hold this in place. Yes, it was an event that happened. But I'm the one that's holding this anger in place. I'm the one that's holding this hatred in place. I'm the one that keeps reliving the events. I'm the one that keeps holding this. Okay. Then I stepped back and looked a little further and saw the person that can do this type of thing to another person is suffering. They're in a hell realm. They're being driven. I can step out of this. Okay, then you begin to have compassion. Okay, when you start to have compassion and see their suffering, then you can start letting go within yourself and find a freeing within yourself to let go of these events. Okay, it's transient. It comes and goes. Items come and go. Everything in life comes and goes. The problem we have is when we try to hang on to something or try to make a difference. Well, this shouldn't have happened. You know? Well, you're not going to change it. It's already happened. Okay? So let go and move on. Okay? We have to be willing to let go. Because what's causing continued suffering is our wanting to change it or hold on to it or make it different. And you're not going to. If you had the hurtful things said to you as a child, okay, those things were said, but it's not going to change no matter how many times you go over it and I wish it were different and it should have changed and why me? Why, you know, why? So who's winding up continuing to hurt you? It's our own mind. It's our own. If we look at, you know, where these hurtful things came from, they came out of ignorance. On the parts of others, out of their ignorance, out of their pain, out of their suffering, out of their unknowing how to, you know, move forward in a centered place. So don't continue to collect and hold this stuff. Why carry this baggage? If it's not freeing and liberating, then it's not true. If it's something hurtful, it's not true. It's ignorance. Okay, it's a shadow. And shadow only has the substance that we give it and continue to feed it. So be willing to let go of the shadows. As far as moving into a better life, the more you enter into the spiritual path and you start coming to centeredness within yourself, these bad habits begin to fall away. They fall away of their own accord. I think there are some people here that can attest to that. Would you like to speak on that for a moment?
Well, before I met you, I'd been drinking and smoking marijuana for a long time, probably 10 years, and had gotten fed up with it and then tried to stop many times, and it probably wouldn't last more than a week or two, and I just couldn't do it. And then I met you, and you know, it was obviously my biggest attachments at the time that I had to let go of. So I tried again, and it was, I'm not going to say it was easy. I still had to try and put effort into it, but I could do it. And they just kind of fell away, and the desires were gone. And now they're really gone.
So. Yeah, as you start moving through this, you know, start moving through the path, those things just kind of, they lose their allure. They lose their hold, okay? So you start to make shifts. As these coverings fall away, you begin to have more clarity, more light. Okay, the burdens start to get lifted. They start to begin to release. And as the burdens and all this other negatives are starting to be released, then you can come into more balance. And it just naturally begins to flow into a more sattvic or a more holistic or a more centered way of being. Okay. It's not that you need to learn how to be good. It's that you need to come to the point of seeing the fallacy and the ignorance of what has been termed the negative in your life. Okay. When you let go of the negatives, you find out that that good has always been there, underlying all of these negatives that are built up. Okay.
Someone left their lights on blue accurate last night.
Self-forgiveness. Self-forgiveness is very important. Everyone makes mistakes in their life, once again, out of ignorance. Okay. But in order to move forward, you have to be willing to let go of it. You can't go back and rectify everything. You can only change and go from today. So change your life today. If you want your karma to be different tomorrow, change your life today. You can become a whole different person. There was the story of the one man, and this is a Buddhist story. He was a black magician for some time, did horrible, horrible things, ended a lot of people's lives. Then one day he had a wake-up call. He reached realization finally in that lifetime. Do you think he would have ever reached if he didn't have self-forgiveness, if he didn't let go of the past? You have to be willing to let go of the past, everyone's past, other people's past and your past. Okay, it's the word, operative word here is past, finished, done. Okay, so move forward from what's here now. Change things here and now. Okay. Let go of the old nonsense. Okay. I'm reading Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. It sounds like the same truth you are teaching. Is this correct? Am I getting it? There's only one truth. Only one divine absolute is, one essence. Eckhart is interesting. He had the experience of being severely depressed, was going to commit suicide, and said, I can't live with myself. Well, wait a minute, what's this, I can't live with myself? Are there two of us or what? He started to kind of question this real deeply, and all of a sudden it just hit him, and he, next thing you knew, he was out. And he woke up in a totally different consciousness. There was no longer this mind that was driving him. He was just here present in stillness. He knew something had changed. And so he tries to speak of just being in the now. What it's like to be in this now when everything falls away and there's nothing else any longer driving you. There's no longer a me identification in place. There just simply is life. So yes, basically, speak on the same type of thing. I don't believe, though, he gives as many tools on how to get there, because in his lifetime, he didn't have any struggle to get there. It was just instant, and all he can do now is speak about it and just tell people, well, to be still, be quiet. But what happens if you go and you just attempt to be quiet? The mind starts going even faster. So there are a lot of teachers out there that just tell you, well, be still for a minute. Well, you have to have a way to come to a point where you can allow yourself to finally wind down and be still and to understand the process. This is why the various tools are given here, the mantra and meditation, and to do one thing at a time in order to give you a way to access certain helps and keys that can help allow the mind to still, that can help allow you to go into and begin to question and cut knots that are binding you, okay? Because, yes, realization is not entered as long as the mind is moving. Any movement is shakti, energy. Creates waves, creates sound, creates color, creates patterns. Absolute is beyond all of that. So it's only found when there is absolute stillness. Stillness to the point of there is no world, there is no you, there is no nothing, anything at that point except for absolute. That's called a nirvikalpa samadhi. A nirvikalpa sahaj samadhi is when the mind no longer rises up there's just still cognition, pure awareness. No running dialogue any longer. Just pure awareness. And in that pure awareness, although the eyes are registering many forms, the mind is not dividing or clinging to any forms. There's simply that one divine essence, presence. Okay. So yes, anyone that enters into realization and steps into non-duality will speak from the same point of reference. Anyone within Dvaita mind, there will be as many cognitive ideas as there are people in the room. Okay. So they will say there are many layers of truth, many shades of truth. Well, you're talking about personal cognition. But within realization, there's only one truth. The rest of all that colorization falls away as transient play. Okay. There's nothing wrong with transient play. Okay. Transient play is just the motion. But underlying all that motion is that singular divine essence, which is unchanging perfection, always. And with that, we've come to the end of the questions today in the Satsang Bowl. Do we have any questions or comments? Oh, such a nice quiet group.
Could you speak a little bit about phenomena with Kundalini? Because there's the external and then there's the internal rising phenomena. And
on phenomena with Kundalini. Once you begin this process and this kundalini, the energy starts going, it starts going through the system and unlocking a lot of cellular memory and starts expanding the consciousness to show you the things that you are not, that the world is not this limited idea that we have. And you start to have a lot of phenomena, such as seeing colors, hearing internal sounds. One moment the consciousness feels like it's totally expanded. The next moment you feel like you're totally contracted. You may see visionary things. You may have visions of just standing there and you see fire all of a sudden, or you see, you know, any type of phenomena may be occurring. Okay. And what this is just clearing out lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of cognitions and things that we've experienced and seen. And, you know, it's this process is a continual of a releasing. You stir the mud in one level, things release. You stir the mud next level, things release. Next level, release, okay? So it's a process of still releasing. Releasing things. The ego wants to keep trying to reroute and keep trying to bring phenomena because it fears that it's going to have extinction if it's not in control. And this is a very real feeling that comes up. Okay. So when this phenomena comes up, what I tell people is just keep saying, neti, neti, not this, not this, not this. Okay? Because any phenomena is just that, it's phenomena. It's like watching some movie on a screen. Don't give it too much importance. There different types of phenomena are just signposts along the way as to where you are in consciousness. Dreams will change as you go through the process. They become more and more symbolic as you go as to what's taking place. So try not to chase phenomena. Don't give it too much importance. Just continue on in the heart center and letting go, letting go, letting go. Keep doing as much as you can of meditation, deeper and deeper, until you finally go into that nirvikalpa and it blows out. And then once it blows out, you reach that zero-point balance, and this phenomena will not keep arising any longer. Okay. You do reach a point where there's no longer any phenomena. People are asking me all the time, well, are you seeing aura? What's coming up when you're working on me? Are you getting messages? What, you know? No, because I'm not concerned with chasing any phenomena. That's all divisionary. It's all divided. It's all transient. Okay. So no, I'm not interested in that any longer. At this point, if we want to see auras, okay. You could, but for what? Once you know that one divine essence, why do you need to chase any of this other stuff? It's transient. Comes and goes. Okay? It's Shakti, it's motion. It's fine. It's fragrant. It's beautiful. We see it. It's the play. It's experience. And that's fine. You know, the experience is fun, but you no longer need to attempt to cling to bigger and better experiences to feel good. Just simple life is experience enough at that point. Just the pure cognition of that is enough. Because whatever is seen, you feel within your being. The motion of a car going by, you feel it in your being. Zoom, you feel it. Okay. It's one. You're not separate from it. So just even the most simple thing can bring great joy to you. So yeah, phenomena, a lot of phenomena arises in Kundalini experience. More than anything else, just to break through limitations, to show you that the world is more expanded and it's not this solid thing with these real heavy boundaries. Very fluid. It's very fluid. Okay. She's just in time for meditation. Yes.
What is mantra?
What is mantra?
And I have a second question. Mm-hmm. And that is, when you talk about lifetimes.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about lifetimes, is this the same being that keeps on coming back to life in different forms?
Okay, don't think too much about like that type of thing. But mantra is a set of sound, and it's also a cognition where you place your consciousness. And this set of sounds carries a certain vibration with it, okay? So we give mantra as a way to change the consciousness, to raise it to a certain vibrational level. Okay. And as far as the other one, it's, you know, when there's a reincarnation that takes place, it's not the same personality that returns. There's not one distinct personality. in one life, you come in, and you come in the next life with certain tendencies. But what happens within that lifetime creates the personality and persona. Okay? So, yes, in one sense, there's one thing that reincarnates. But in another sense, no, it's very fluid. It's very fluid. In one life, it can be a very happy persona. And the next, it could be, you know, very miserable and a whole totally different type of an attitude. And so it's fluid. Okay. Until one reaches realization in this steady, where the rest of all this stuff kind of falls away. So people think too much about these types of things, you know.
Yes. Just some ashram protocol is that we don't point our feet or the bottom of our feet towards a guru.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just noticing that today.
That's okay. I don't take offense. But if you have an Indian guru, they would be very highly offended if you point the soles of your feet at them. They take offense. I don't take offense. I don't care. They're only feet, okay? I don't care. I know you're not doing it out of disrespect, you know. No, your feet are fine the way they are. Don't worry about it. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it's fine, fine. Don't worry about it. We can do some energy work and help with that as well, that pain. So yeah, it's just when we have Indian devotees that come up, then I ask a little more protocol be done so that they're not just wondering what's wrong with these people here. But as long as, we don't have any Indian devotees over from India, it's fine. Don't worry about it, you know. I don't care, you know. There's no difference. I don't see any separation between what I am and what you are. So why would I care about that?
Why do you take offense to if someone is having the feet pointed?
Because just in that society, it's deemed to be extremely rude. It just is. It's just part of the cultural conditioning of that society. So, yeah. It's like in our cultural society, if somebody burps at the table, it's rude. But if in other cultures, if you don't burp, they think you don't enjoy the food, you know? So it's another cultural conditioning. Same thing. It's just what people get used to. Okay. So, no, relax. Come in and just relax. It's fine. So at this moment, we'll go ahead and take a break. There's tea. We have plenty of lots of various types of tea if anybody would like to have some tea before. And take a restroom break, and then we'll reconvene for meditation. Okay, thank you for coming. Namaste.